Welcome to the Crude Life Media Network podcast. My name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist, and on today's episode, we talk with Amy Myrdal Miller of Farmers Daughters Consulting about technology on the farm, consolidation in agribusiness, and what the future looks like in precision agriculture. In just a moment, our interview with Amy Myrdal Miller. But first, I want to take this moment to remind you good folks to please support our sponsors. They literally keep our lights on. Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching. Go to coachingwithhatch.com for more information or send me an email, jason@thecrudelife.com, and I'll personally make sure Eric Hatch gets your email. That's Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching. MBI Energy Services. For more information on MBI Energy Services or to check out their latest job openings, visit their website, www.mbienergyservices.com. And now our interview with the founder and president of Farmers Daughters Consulting, Amy Myrdal Miller.
Good morning. My name is Amy Myrdal Miller. I am president of Farmers Daughter Consulting Incorporated in Carmichael, California.
And I understand this is a little bit of a homecoming for you as you're from the North Dakota area. Talk to me a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I grew up on a big farm up in northeast North Dakota in Pemina County. When my dad was farming in the 70s, before my brothers, my much older brothers, joined the operation, it was mostly wheat and some cattle, and it grew to a large cow-calf operation, a lot of different diversity in the row crops, and it was a fantastic way to grow up.
Did you ever go to the Pembina Gorge, which I call probably one of the most unsung natural beauties of North Dakota? I mean, I believe more people should experience that. Did you ever go there?
Absolutely. Hiking in the gorge, skiing at Frostfire, that was part of the childhood years.
So you grew up on a farm, and we're here at a dietetics annual conference in Fargo, North Dakota at the Doubletree here. What are you doing here?
Well, as a farmer's daughter with a business named Farmer's Daughter Consulting, I work on connecting health professionals, specifically registered dietitians, with farmers. I think, you know, if you're talking to people about food and nutrition, you have to first understand where our food comes from. We've got fewer and fewer people involved in agriculture. 150 years ago, more than 90% of the U.S. population was involved in agriculture. Today, it's less than 2%. And I think we have to realize how hard farmers work in a very risky business environment to provide a safe, affordable, abundant food supply. So I am here talking on behalf of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics Foundation on modern farming tools and techniques.
That's a great topic. Last year we did a story on the dairy industry, which has been shrinking at an unbelievable rate, or I should say maybe consolidating or shrinking, depends on how you want to look at it. That happened before, if you want to go back to the wheat prices dropping in the 70s to, you know, maybe what's happening now with corn. I just saw an article where soy is going to be the big boom crop this year. I don't know if that's subsidized or cheap seed or what, but I was just reading how a lot of farmers in the Midwest are going to be planting soy this year. What have you seen over the last 20 years to kind of elaborate on the shrinking farmer?
Well, you know, the biggest challenge I see from a very personal side is that the next generation isn't necessarily interested in going into farming. So our farmers are an aging population. The 2012 Census of Agriculture shows that the average age in 2012 is 58.3 years old. And I look at some of my nephews who say, I'm not sure I want to do that. I want a steady paycheck. I want more predictable income. I don't want to go through the risk, the stress, the heartache that my parents did. So we've got fewer and fewer farmers, which means there's fewer and fewer people. And as somebody retires or dies, often that's the way a farmer retires. And mm-hmm. I'm somewhat joking when I say that.
But it's true. It is.
Then it's true. Then another farmer says, I'm going to pick up that land, or I'm going to rent it from the family. I'm going to get a little bigger and bigger. And thank God that there's technology and equipment that allow farmers to get larger and become more efficient when there are fewer people to do the work. So, you know, that's one of the changes that I'm seeing. I'm also seeing, you know, a lot more science and technology, and farmers have a lot of choice in how they operate. Farming is the only sector of our national economy that has a positive export balance. So we've got, you know, a global market system. And, you know, you were just talking about soybeans. Great prices because of global demand, because of things like the Chinese having a higher level of income. They want more meat, so they need more feed for their poultry operations, their pork operations. So, you know, we all want to embrace a local farm economy because that's good for the people we know, the faces we love. But we also have to embrace a global economy.
Do you see a balance happening? Because I think you're right on there is such a strong need for local produce. And that's just I don't know how you want to say it. produce wilts, and it can't travel long distance. Some can, but some can't. But there are some, like a corn or a pulse crop or whatever, that you can really ship, you know. I mean, over to another country, and it's not going to do very much damage to it. Where if you ship a head of lettuce from California to China, it might not make it in time. So do you see the balance happening? Is that kind of, or am I really kind of, I don't know, out in left field on that one?
Well, you know, I live in California. We grow 50% of the nation's fruits and vegetables. Those get shipped a lot of places, including Japan, China, mm-hmm. other parts of Asia. So there are certain crops that ship very well. There are other crops like lettuce that you mentioned that grow very quickly. A head of iceberg lettuce grows in 28 to 36 days in the Salinas Valley of California when it's nice and warm. It's well irrigated. So, you know, there's some really unique innovation going on in the system so that you can get more locally grown produce. One of the companies I've been watching with great interest is a company called Arrow Farms, mm-hmm. started by Silicon Valley tech guys who said, how do we apply technology to intensive agriculture? So they have a 70,000 square foot warehouse out in New Jersey that's growing microgreens, dark leafy greens, other vegetables for Manhattan restaurants, some supermarkets in that area. And this is growing food without soil or sunlight. I mean, talk about application of, you know, just a misting system with the nutrients the plants need. They get enhanced flavor, tenderness. The owner always teases me that I'd love his kale, even though I'm a known kale hater, because his baby kale is supposedly so sweet and tender. And they're looking at exporting that technology to Shanghai, which has a population density of 24 million. Mm-hmm. You know, so how do you get local foods into urban areas? I think that's one of the most exciting advances in agriculture today.
Do you see that? That's a great topic, because I have been following this for about 10 years, the urban gardens, where I actually have a garden in my basement. I've got a grow light. I've got herbs and vegetables growing down there. It's an unfinished basement that I just turned into a garden, and I've been getting fresh produce all year long from my basement. Now, it's a very primitive system that I'm using, but as I look to see the vertical gardens coming, and as I look to see the hydroponics really finding its whole new industry outside of the cannabis industry, by the way, are you seeing that there is a legitimate opportunity for a small farmer to make it as an urban farmer?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can, you know, what we're seeing with the data on farm sizes is farms are getting larger, mm-hmm. and they're also getting smaller. And yeah. The smaller is related to finding a niche in the marketplace, customization, market access. There's a small farmer in Northern California. He has about 8.5 acres. He started with a half acre growing berries for San Francisco restaurants. He's now got 8.5 acres. He's got a million-dollar business, multi-million-dollar business based on a very small plot of land, but with very focused growing for customers that want very high-quality daily delivery. You know, that's just one example. I have to laugh, though, when you said you got grow lights. I'm thinking he's growing weed in his basement.
That's why I brought it up, because it's funny because, you know, the idea I had was a couple of years ago I was going to do microgreens.
Yep.
And it just, you know, life happens. I've got a child. And so it just, I didn't have the time. And so I thought, well, I bought a lot of the equipment. I can't have it go to waste. And so I just said, I'm going to do a garden in my basement.
Yeah,
that way,
awesome.
Maybe save me a few bucks at the grocery store and that sort of thing. You mentioned earlier about the changing of the worker, the farmer. In my old neighborhood, I actually had two farmers live on my block in the city, and they would drive to a farm every day, which was unusual to me because,
yep.
like you, I kind of grew up on a farm, so I was used to the worker being on the farm or the owner. And one of the workers quit after about 2 years because he said it was hard work and it just wasn't worth it. The other farmer, he stuck with it because he was doing the technology stuff. He was doing more of the GPS farming. Do you got a comment about the old style of farming, which is hard work, versus the new technology side?
Well, I mean, you know, farmers are constantly adapting to improve their outcomes, financial, you know, yield, the intensity of the work. If you can afford to apply the technology to farming, it can make your life easier. It can, you know, those precision tools can provide better outcomes for you if you're using the technology that allows you to precisely seed in a certain area based on the needs of that soil to apply the fertilizers and other inputs and crop protection very precisely, you get better outcomes. You know, so the technology can be very beneficial. But again, as a farmer, you've got to have the capital to invest to get that mm-hmm. technology. So there are a lot of farmers who have to embrace both the old, use the old equipment and technology until they can get enough capital to get the new technology.
Just a couple questions left here with Amy Myrdal.
Myrdal
Miller. Just a couple questions left with Amy Myrdal Miller. UAS, do you talk much about UAS? Are you involved with the unmanned drone industry that's in precision agriculture, they call it? Are you into that yet, or is that still a little advanced for what you're doing?
Yeah, aware of it, you know, because again, that's something like in California, if you've got huge plots of land that are being irrigated, drones are an awesome way to look for irrigation systems that have broken down. And because water is such an incredibly precious resource for California farmers, managing that water well is a very important topic. So, I pay attention to the news on use of that kind of technology, but certainly not an area of my expertise.
You don't call yourself an expert in precision agriculture then, okay. Some final thoughts from you. I like to give guests the final thought, whatever direction they want to go, if they want to reemphasize something, if they want to bring something up that we haven't talked about yet, or, you know, plug your business, of course. So I guess the floor is yours.
You know, as a farmer's daughter, I feel really strongly that we need to advocate for farmers to have the right to choose the business decisions that are going to have the most impact on them being sustainable from an environmental perspective and, more importantly, from a financial perspective. So when we're making criticisms about how farmers practice, man, walk a mile in their shoes to figure out why they're doing that. Talk to a farmer. If you have a concern about agriculture, don't take your news from social media. Don't take it from a documentary that may have a significant bias. Talk to a farmer and find out why he or she is doing what he or she is doing, why it makes sense, and why it's going to make him or her financially successful.
And how can people get in touch with you if they want some consulting out of you?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I should have said in the beginning, I'm a registered dietitian, so I focus on nutrition marketing, culinary nutrition, and ag communications work. My website is farmersdaughterconsulting.com, and you can find me on any social media channel at Amy Myrdal Miller.
And that was Amy Myrdal Miller, founder and president of Farmers Daughters Consulting. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. We're also on social media. Please check out our Facebook and Twitter pages. And we'd like to thank you once again for supporting the Crude Life Media Network. Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching. Go to coachingwithhatch.com for more information or send me an email, jason@thecrudelife.com, and I'll personally make sure that Eric Hatch gets your email. That's Hatch Coaching and Eric Hatch. MBI Energy Services. For more information about MBI Energy Services or to check out their latest job openings, visit their website at www.mbienergyservices.com. That's mbienergyservices.com. And that's it for this episode. Till next time, be happy and remember, sometimes life can just be crude. We'll see you next time, folks.
Well, it's good to mind your own business, but you better pay attention to. You might turn a blind eye on the world, but there's always an eye on you. There's always an eye on you.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids and Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.